Let me begin by thanking all of you for coming and for this opportunity to share a little bit of me with you. Let me begin by sharing this quote. Let us put our minds together and see what life we can make for our children. That quote is from Chief Sitting Bull. What the best and wisest parent wants for his own child, that must the community want for all of his children. John Dewey. My name is Dan Neared. I want you to know that I do feel a great sense of honor that I am being considered as a candidate for the position of superintendent for the Madison Metropolitan School District. The two quotes that I chose for the beginning of my candidate statement speak to who I am as a leader and how I would want to engage and work with you, members of this great community. I view the contemporary role of the superintendent in this way. The work, frankly, involves much more than managing a complex organization called a school district. More important is having an ever-present focus on ensuring that the work we do is aimed at improving the lives of the children we serve. As an educational leader, my effectiveness should be evaluated by key indicators that help us understand whether the lives of this community's children are getting better. Are more students becoming proficient as learners? Do we have evidence that our students are developing the necessary skills that will allow them to function in an ever more complex, diverse world? Can we demonstrate that more of our students are actively engaged in the schooling process to see what kind of life we can create for our children? There's a two-letter word in the quote from Chief Sitting Bull that also is revealing about how we would do our work. The word I'm referring to is the word us. I'm acutely aware as a leader that about the relationship between leaders and followers. In fact, my strong bias is that the only reason leaders exist is because of followers. I would support the development of a very leadership-full school district, not only through my actions as a leader, but the work we would do in the school district. By ensuring input and by ensuring involvement of key internal and external stakeholders. Leadership of all types and in all corners of the school district. Teacher leaders, support staff leaders, student leaders, parent leaders, community leaders. Stakeholders would see involvement as we do our work in order to ensure that we in fact are creating a better life for our children. I do feel it's important to share with you that I am a proponent of doing work in schools that is consistent with what we know and call professional learning communities. Simply put, what they are people working together, people learning together, and then acting upon that which is learned, and in this case, to improve the lives of the kids we would serve. Shared vision, common purpose, team learning, all an environment that supports improvement in learning for all children. The us would really be us. As leaders, we need to commit to being active in the pursuit of seeing what life, in fact, we can create for our children. The Dewey quote also speaks to who I am as a person. That must the community want for all of its children. My commitment would be to work to balance all sorts of competing interests to ensure a focus on all kids. I would assure you we would work collaboratively to improve learning and opportunity for all students. This is my commitment, with the understanding that balancing this is one of the most complex challenges we face today in education. Because I know that our kids, regardless of community, need more from us than less from us. At the same time, the Dewey quote reminds us of very significant equity issues that exist in urban school districts. While we work to improve learning and opportunity for all kids, we must work to eliminate achievement gaps for certain groups of kids. From my perspective, my opinion is the greatest disequalizer for children is family income, living in poverty. Lacking early opportunity to learn can create lifetime gaps for many children, and we cannot afford to let that happen. When it does, there's loss of human capital, not only for that child, but for the community as a whole. I believe we must hold the highest aspirations for all our children. We must look to the day when achievement is not connected to family income, when it's not connected to race, when it's not connected to mobility or disability. Our work as educators, support staff, and community members must be dedicated to the equity issue, and that is leveling the playing field for all children. Believing that achievement gaps are eliminated through best practices more intensely provided, no one has to lose as we work to address achievement gaps. All kids need to be exposed to what I call good first teaching. Some kids need more doses. Our focus would be on quality curriculum, research-based instructional strategies, and contemporary ways to assess children and their learning. I also want to share with you that I look at the role of the superintendent from a dual perspective. First and foremost, as a child advocate, I would work with you, members of this great community, to ensure that children's basic needs are met and that our children are in fact ready, and when they enter school, they're ready to learn. I would also work to ensure that our schools are the best places possible for our children when they arrive at school, regardless of their age. From a very simplistic perspective, best places in schools are accomplished through what I mentioned a minute ago, a continuous focus on best practices in the areas of curriculum, instruction, and assessment. And also, I want you to know that I'm a strong proponent of each school and the entire school district having a healthy school culture on the adult side. The manner in which we work in schools, whether we understand that or not, on the adult side, really matters for children. I would dedicate myself to working with you to ensure we focus on best practices and to ensure that our schools have very positive culture for children. I also would focus on a strong commitment of looking at diversity from a very positive perspective. I know there are challenges with diversity of all types, but my very strong bias is that diversity is a key strength. And the reason that it is because of the world that our children are growing into. That world is a world of vast differences. It's not a world of sameness. And I believe we hold an obligation to ensure that children, through our curricular experiences, as well as their being just next to each other in school, that they learn how to deal while young with differences, because their world is one of differences. I want you to know as I close these comments that I would work again to ensure a leadership-full organization to support continuous improvement. I believe in accountability, but I don't believe in managing people into submission. Schools in the district improve through creating the right types of direction for change and through providing people, namely our staff members, the kind of support that they need to make changes. I would focus and have us together a focus on teaching and learning. And it's important for me as I close to also express to you, while I believe it's important to focus on what I'll call standards of the mind, that children have a relevant knowledge base, that they know how to learn, I would also make the commitment to focus on what I call standards of the heart, developing children in children, a caring and contributing attitude toward others. We don't do that work alone, but we need to do that work together to ensure that our kids develop in the fullest way possible. Tonight, in sharing these comments, I want you to know more about what's inside of me. I have not shared any improvement agenda because that would be premature and presumptuous at this point. I can share with you that I would be committed to building on the strengths of this great organization and helping this organization go to the next places it needs to go to get better around the lives of children. I want you to know again about what's on the inside and how I think as a leader. I also want you to know that I have spent most of my entire adult life as a learner myself, taking various courses and being involved in continuous learning and educational programs. And that, in fact, I do come from middle-class values. My father was an auto worker, and my mom primarily worked at home. And my two brothers and I are first-generation college graduates. But in that environment, there never was a doubt about the value of a good education, and in our case, a very good public education. My wife and I, and you got a chance to meet her earlier, have been public servants our entire career, me within education and her as a public health nurse. And we have dedicated our careers to serving community and in particular improving the lives of children. Our two children are great examples of what a good, high-quality public education provides. They have also taught us, as I'm sure your kids teach you, the concept of humility. As many of you know, to be a parent is to be humbled on a fairly regular basis. In conclusion, and I really welcome your questions, I want you to know I view myself as a fair person, as a collaborative person, as a consensus builder, and others have described me as a tireless worker. I'm an optimist and I view life with opportunity. And finally, I am a person of social justice. This world, especially for our children, must become a better place. And it's up to us to make it so. You know, we oftentimes say our children are our future. And there's implicit truth in that statement. But the reality of it is that we are our children's future. And the actions that we take and the decisions that we make can lead to brighter futures for our kids. And that must be our commitment. So with that, I thank you for coming tonight. And thank you for this opportunity to share a little bit about me. And I would welcome any questions if that's appropriate at this point. Thank you. Please. Yes.
In your statement, you talked about kids from low-income families. Mm-hmm. As you know, a court recently ruled that in Wisconsin, all districts need to at least identify gifted students in schools. This is especially important for disadvantaged kids whose families may not be able to provide outside resources to keep those kids going and interested. In Madison, we only have one TAG resource teacher for every 6 or 7 schools. Mm-hmm. How do you see identifying all gifted students working with such a low number of TAG teachers in Madison?
Sure. Well, first of all, one of the things that I have a very hard time accepting is that in pursuit of helping one kid, that we avoid thinking about helping other kids. And I refer to that in my very early comments about this balancing act. And I believe that our obligation is to try to balance all of that. But as I told you, that's the tough thing today. I believe in appropriate identification of gifted children. I believe that there's some commitment that has to be made to help staff learn how to do that in good ways. But you know, one of the things I would share with you, and maybe this goes to what I said about that first role about a superintendent, about advocating for the basic needs of children. In my current job, and I know that that's the case in this community, leaders are involved in all kinds of conversations about reducing budgets in order to meet the current revenue cap formula. And I would say to you that those conversations do not come naturally to us. Because of what I said earlier, I know our kids need more. And I know that we are in trouble unless we realize that there are long-term consequences to not providing them more. So having said that, my view is sometimes we rest with the number of FTE that we have, not because we want to, because of how the current funding formula works. I have ideas on how to do that. I have examples from our current practice where I am to ensure that kids are being properly identified. And the last comment I would make is, you know, as we identify a set of what we call interventions for kids other than special education who need help, who may be a year or two from reaching proficiency, we also need to be prepared to identify a set of enrichments for kids who are proficient and we need to take them to their next place. That's what it's about. Thank you. Yes.
And following up to those comments and looking at the other end of the spectrum, and as you talk about balance, I'm curious what the philosophy is on educating children with very significant disabilities in schools.
My philosophy is that we have a responsibility to educate every child. And we have a responsibility to take every child from where they are to their next place in learning. You know, in my current district, we have a belief statement that reads, all children are able to learn and will learn. We add that will learn on, and people say, how can you guarantee learning? And my strong bias is, unless we can guarantee learning, we, in fact, may have outlived our usefulness as an institution. At the same time, I'm not saying all kids learn in the same way, the same amount, in the same period of time. So, but every human being, including every adult sitting in this room, has a capacity to learn the next thing beyond which they currently know, and then the next thing beyond that. And that's our responsibility as developmentalists to ensure that's what happens. So I understand those commitments in law, but I think it's a moral commitment more than anything. Yes?
Yes, presently in the state of Wisconsin, a teachers' union has taken an opposing view to virtual education. In your experience level, what involvement does the union have in telling the district what should be taught, how it should be taught, and who should teach it?
Well, I think first of all, it needs to be looked at what does the current contract call for, because there may be language, specific language that has to be addressed in relationship. As a general principle, it's the school district's obligation to define the curriculum. But having said that, then I feel it's only fair to be fair. I do have philosophies about virtual education, and I think it can be a very useful tool. But I can also share with you that we haven't been the quickest in my current position to get into total virtual education. We look at it as a great opportunity to expand the curriculum, but there's school and there's schooling, if that makes any difference. And I believe a lot of what comes from schooling is where young people meet and greet each other and themselves. You learn how to be as a person in the schooling environment. So any child who's not coming to school, a virtual education is much better than no education. But I look at those forms of distance learning as enhancements to the curriculum, as opposed to replacements of a total schooling process. I struggle with that. I'm not a strong proponent of that.
As a follow-up, do you have computers in your home?
I do. Yes.
You mentioned in your statement that diversity is a key strength. And I'm wondering, what kind of resources do you currently allocate toward equal employment opportunity and affirmative action within your current school district? And what you would do in the Madison School District to recruit diverse talent?
Sure. I can tell you that one of our six priorities as a district is the recruitment, selection, and retention of the highest quality staff. Within that, we have a specific strategy that deals with minority recruitment. And I can tell you we're struggling. And so one of the things that I would look toward, not knowing all of the things that are in place here, because I don't, is I'd look to join with the community to say, how can we improve this? And how can we look at different recruiting and recruiting fairs and hiring processes to do a better job? Because we do need to, our plan recognizes the need to hire more people of color, for instance. Having said that, another strategy that we've used is to develop hiring tools that get at the cultural, how culturally competent an employee would be. Because, in fact, we have an obligation to know, regardless of skin color or language background, is there the proper disposition to deal with dealing with differences? So we've been on that front as well. So, again, it would be a lot for me to figure out what's in place here. I would certainly commit to that as an important area to advance. And then I'd have to look at what's being done.
Thank you.
Sure. I'll come over here and then over to you.
What are you most proud of?
What I'm most proud of is the fact that together in my current circumstance, we've been able to work with a very clear focus on children, meeting the needs of children. And not that there isn't struggle at times associated with that, because there's limited resources, there's competing interest. But I can tell you that I'm most proud of the fact that our conversations are grounded in the lives of children. Yes, sir.
Can you talk a little bit about initiatives or mechanisms for community involvement in your current district?
Sure. Well, I can tell you that it's something that I feel critically important, and it has to come in many forms, in many shapes. We have employed some important councils, one of which I would tell you is a parent council, where I, on a monthly basis, meet with a representative from each of our 35 schools. And what we do is inform them of initiatives, we get their input, they ask us questions, and we're able to have a dialogue. The other thing that I'm also very proud of is, together with the current Board of Education I work with, we've developed a series of engagement practices where the governing work of the board and superintendent goes outside of the boardroom, and we go to different places in the community. We were interested in getting input about our co-curricular programs. I'll just give you an example. And we went to, we scheduled it at a church with a high Latino population. The kids were in religious ed classes, and we had 100 parents for 2 hours while their kids were in classes. We need to think in different kind of ways to engage people. And that would be something I'd have a great interest in, exploring those kinds of ideas. Yes?
You mentioned something about professional learning communities. Can you talk about how you might expand the concept of professional learning communities to include other community resources, including the university?
I would be interested in very strong and very defined kinds of partnerships between the school district and the university. And the extent to which those partnerships can directly serve young people, either young people who, in our case, would be fifth graders who have who would be first-generation college attenders and who don't have aspirations built within them to be able to go to college, to be able to learn through the partnership at the university, what is that? How do you do that? Because if you haven't gone to college, you have no one to talk to that's gone to college, how do you figure that out? All the way to enhancing the kind of initiatives that are in place to prepare future teachers and future administrators. I know that there's many partnership efforts, and I'm not trying to presume that I know all of, because I don't know all of that. But I would have a very strong commitment to looking into every corner possible to serve mutual interest of the school district as well as the university. Strong, and the extent to which it gets directly to kids, 8-year-olds and as well as 21-year-olds who want to be teachers, that would be my interest in that type of conversation. Okay. You're welcome. Yes?
I'm a member of the board of directors of the Madison Symphony Orchestra, and we've noted a decrease over the last several years in the number of Madison students participating in a youth concert series. And in a broader sense, what are your views as far as the fine arts in the school system in face of the caps,
right.
No child left behind, and a bunch of things?
Right. Well, I can let me tell you kind of from go to the extreme just for a minute. I would not want to see any federal requirement like No Child Left Behind ever place a school district in a position of compromising on the arts. There's plenty of evidence that show that kids learn better by being involved in the arts. And I would do all within my power to ensure that would not happen for those kind of reasons. And I mention that because there is, in fact, some narrowing of the curriculum in different places in this country as we have to focus on literacy and as we have to focus on numeracy. But we have to really resist that temptation. And then the second point I would make is that we need to join hands, if there is a we, at some point in time, to work together to see the funding formula changed. And I know that this is... I say that with the clear understanding that the fiscal situation the state is in right now is not good. I do understand that. But I look at education from an investment point of view. And we need to make these kind of investments in children. I also know that superintendents alone have limited ability to make that change. It needs to be joining forces. We need parents involved with that kind of advocacy. We need strong leaders who support the arts in the community to say we need a stronger arts program. Because at the end of the day, why wouldn't we want that for our kids? Yes?
What's your position on after-school programming and working with the community and our social organization?
Here's my position. For two reasons, I am a strong advocate for those kind of programs. Number one, the standards should not be lowered for any child. Some kids need more time. And that's the great way to provide more time. See, one of the things we haven't done in this whole entire country is we've added more standards, we haven't added more time. And so don't change the standards. Don't create a lower expectation for children, but provide ways to provide more time. The other reason is the data that talks about kids after school and the risk factors that exist in that after-school window. And so if we have young people constructively involved in after-school programming, there's going to be less of that at-risk behavior. And so I'm strongly in support of those types of programs for that reason, those reasons.
Got time for one more question.
Yes.
Yes. Madison, the size of the student population it has the largest budget in any school district in the state of Wisconsin. But it's not showing that the ability to learn and educate has benefited the students overall versus other districts.
Well, I guess here's what I don't fully understand the context in which you make that statement. But I guess as a candidate,
your comment originally was that money basically should be expanded in the educational base, not decreased. Since Madison is paying more per pupil than most other districts in the state of Wisconsin, but the ability for the students' learning ability hasn't proven to be any significantly different than those districts spending less of the same size of student population.
Well, I guess what I would want to be able to do, again, if there was a future time to do that, I need to understand better your data when you make that kind of statement. I need to understand that because, and to know that what you're using to make that statement. But here's what I want you to know, is education is a human resource intensive proposition. And there are commitments that have to be made to do this job well. On the other hand, I have no hesitation to talk about an accountability system that could tie to results. I don't have a problem with that. On the other hand, this is my last comment, and that is that I don't see things improving until we work more metaphorically with arms around kids as opposed to pointing fingers. And I know that we have an obligation to do well with the community's money. That's been my commitment no matter what job I've had. And I'll commit to that if I should be here. But the point is that we need to work in a way that is supportive of our kids, that is accountability-based. None of that is problematic from my point of view.
Thank you all for coming.